Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Captain Hunter's Podcast, the podcast that is dedicated towards bridging the divide between the police and the communities that they serve. Thank you so much for tuning in for this quick and brief episode. I just wanted to give a midweek encouragement to you all to keep on going, to keep on thriving, to keep on striving. It's February now, right? It's Black History Month, and we are a full month and a few days into the year 2020. So how are you doing on those New Year's resolutions? Did you give them up after the first week, the first 2 weeks, first 3 weeks, first month? How are you doing so far? Analyze yourself and just question yourself and say and ask yourself how you're doing with your progression so far and any of those New Year's resolutions that you wanted to give. And I wanted to lead that into a story that I just came across. And I said I wasn't going to do this and just always read articles, but I think it's very important in this particular manner. I came across an article about procrastination. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that, and I'll finish off the episode with talking about just a little bit about Black History, since it is Black History Month. Let's just talk a little bit, first of all, about procrastination. And there's been some interesting research surrounding this idea of procrastination. Now, procrastination, most people are procrastinating, you know, on a number of different things, whether it's starting that new, I don't want to call it diet, but starting that new way of eating, right? That change in the dietary habit that you wanted to have, beginning and continuation of the exercise routine that you said you were going to do, doing your taxes, doing that homework, studying for a test, applying for that job, whatever it is that you are putting off, what you should be doing today for tomorrow. And I think that that is really such a problem that many people have, right? It's why we don't start those businesses. It's why we don't go back to school. It's why we don't, you know, you fill in the blank, you fill in the block as to why we have not done with those things. Why haven't you started saving for retirement? Why haven't you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's been a lot of psychologists who have been working on this problem of procrastination. And initially they thought that it was about poor time management and low or no self-control. But a little more nuanced way of looking at this is that procrastination, they're now understanding, is tending to be a coping mechanism, right? They're putting off, people are putting off unpleasant experiences, unpleasant ideas, things that are emotionally unpleasant to them. They're putting it off. Instead, they're doing something that is going to temporarily boost their ego, boost their mood, and a temporary fix to a longer term problem, essentially. So once they begin to put off what is important, what they should be doing, then they get feelings of shame and guilt, and that tends to feed into more procrastination. So you're shameful and you're guilty. Now you want to hide your head underneath the covers, proverbially speaking. You put your head under the covers, and that creates a vicious cycle of shame and guilt and putting it off because you don't want to confront the things that you need to do. So one of the biggest keys to overcoming procrastination is to forgive yourself. You have to forgive yourself. If you forgive yourself of the pain and of the emotional feelings towards procrastination, then you're more likely to engage in the activity that you need to engage in next time, right? So if you're studying for a test, if you have a big test that is coming up or a big job assignment or something along those lines, and you put it off, but you have this active speak within your mind that forgives yourself and says, listen, I need to forgive myself. I can't beat myself up over the fact that I didn't get this thing done. Then you are more likely, research is showing that you are more likely to engage in that task next time. Why? Because you have not fed that guilt and shame monster that lives within your heart and then within your mind. So one of the first steps in overcoming procrastination is that ability to forgive yourself. So if you're dealing with procrastination, if you know you should have started that diet, if you know you should have went for that walk, you know you should have did that exercise routine, you know you should have read that paper, you know you should have, and you fill in the blank from that point on, you know you should have. If you forgive yourself for doing it, yes, I'm not going to beat myself over the fact that I didn't do X, and I'm going to do X next time, then the feelings of shame and guilt will not be pent up in your mind, and you are more likely to engage in the activity that you need to engage in the next time the opportunity comes around. So the first step in dealing with procrastination is the ability to forgive yourself. Another strategy is to think about yourself, or try to put yourself into a futuristic type of frame of thinking. So what some researchers have done is they have used these new technologies, right? Everybody probably has these different phone apps where you can age yourself and see what you look like in 10, 15, 20, 25 years. So what they did was, some researchers did was they put themselves, or they allowed students to view themselves 25 years from now. And if they viewed themselves in 25 years from now, then the students were more likely to save for retirement because they could see themselves in that situation. So I think a lot of times, the point of this is to imagine yourself, try to do the best that you can to imagine yourself, what you're going to be, what place you're going to be in 25 years. A lot of times when people are going for testing processes or for interviews for jobs or for promotional exams, they will, the interviewer will ask you where you see yourself in 5 years, right? What is your ultimate goals in life? And so I think that people need to do that in order to get over their procrastination. Where do you see yourself in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 25 years, right? As adult learners who went back to school, which I am one who went back to school to finish my education, I did it. A lot of times I didn't feel like doing the work. I didn't feel like doing the paperwork. I didn't feel like doing X, Y, and Z, but I did it because I realized that it would have a benefit and a payoff further on down the road. So maybe you're on one of those people who are dealing with some type of health issues. And the best method to deal with those health issues is simply to exercise today. So if you can imagine yourself and your life expectancy and your health situation, and you know what it is today, and you're borderline diabetic or you're dealing with some heart issues today or whatever, and you understand that in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, it's not going to be any better. So that can give you that little boost and push in the right direction and say, you know what, I need to eat right today. You know what, I do need to get out here and get this walk and get this exercise in. So I think a great strategic example is to imagine yourself to the best of your ability, and or use one of those apps. If you feel safe enough on your phone, that's in a whole nother conversation, whether people are spying on you and getting into your phone with these particular apps. But if you feel safe enough, maybe take a snapshot of that picture, put it up and say, and imagine yourself 25 years from now, how you look, what your weight is, what your emotional frame of mind is at that point in time. And that should give you an incentive to continue your education. It will give you that incentive to work out, to exercise, to save for retirement, and to take those steps that you need to get in order to get to where you want to be. Another technique is to, if you have a long-term goal, right, where you want to be in 5 years, well, you need to mark the little progress that you're making towards those goals, right? So if your ultimate goal is to drop 25 pounds, then when you document after a week or so that you've lost 1 or 2 pounds, then you need to celebrate that. Now, I'm not talking about celebrate that with the cheesecake, but I'm saying that you need to celebrate that. Mark it down in your calendar, write it in your phone, send yourself a little message, maybe even post something on Facebook that you're working towards your goal and celebrate that. And so that can help to be a booster to your, we talked about the negative type of feelings, right? The feelings of shame and guilt, which help to feed the monster, right? So feed the other monster, and that's the good positive energy monster that can live within you, and that you're feeding your ego by the fact that you've lost 1 or 2 pounds. The fact that you were only able to walk around the local high school track 2 times, now you can get around there 4 times without the same feelings of tiredness. Or that you were only able to run for 10 minutes. Now you can run for, 12 minutes, right? So these little small steps, right, as you progress towards your ultimate goal of, okay, well, I have a goal to save, $10,000 this year, I've started saving and I've saved $100 already. So whatever it is your little goal is, small incremental steps towards them. So I'll finish off with that, I think that those are 3 different steps that we can take in order to defeat procrastination, right? The first one is don't beat yourself up, right? Understand the emotional charges that go behind them. Imagine yourself where you want to be in the next few years. Take a picture of yourself, write it down, and take the and finally take those small incremental steps and celebrate those steps. Celebrate them. Celebrate those steps that you're taking towards whatever goal it is. If you want to get to that degree, you know, the first step is obviously calling the recruiters for the school, applying, taking a first class, acing a first class, whatever it is. Take those first steps and then celebrate that along your journey to get to where you want to get to. So I hope that was very encouraging for you all, and I hope that you all learned something. So I want to finish off by reading just a little story about Black history. And before I get into that, I really have a lot of problems, and there have been a lot of debate about Black history and who should be celebrating Black history and Black history just for Black people. I want to make this very clear. Black history is not for Black people, or not solely for Black people. I would even say not for Black people, right? Black people should be Black people in America, particularly who I'm speaking about, talking about, should understand their history for themselves, right? And that's another conversation I want to have for another day. And the fact that Black people don't celebrate enough to their own history, understand their history, and everything like that. So yes, it is Black history is a time for us to reconnect with our history and to learn about our history. Yes, but Black history is really for other ethnic groups in this country to realize the contributions that African-Americans made. Once again, Latino history in Hispanic Heritage Month and all that kind of stuff is not for them. It's for Black people. It's for white people. It's for other people who live in this country who can take a time and a moment to say, OK, let's take a look at what Hispanic heritage has brought to the conversation into the betterment of the United States. And that is the same idea behind Black history. It's to remind other people and to tell other people and to inform other people about what happens in the United States. I always had a problem, and I didn't mention this, but I'll mention it now. But during the history, celebration of the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., you know, when we celebrate his life, or at least his birth back in January, I can remember being in middle school and a teacher talking about, you know, this time of year and how it was for African Americans and the life of Martin Luther King Jr. and what he did for African Americans and for Black people. I could not at that time articulate it the way that I can now, but I just had a problem with that. And I can articulate it now because the problem is his life wasn't about Black people. It was about all people. And it was about a reminder that many of the gains of the civil, many of the most important gains that people have gotten because of the civil rights have come to other people, females, right? The LGBT community, right? Martin Luther King Jr.'s life was not about just saving Black people. And even though he did to a certain degree in a certain manner, but the most important contributions and aspects of his life were about what he did for all Americans. And that is something we have to get. African-American history, African-American heritage is about telling other people that we have a story too. And our story didn't just begin with being escaped from Africa or being rescued from Africa, as some people would put it, put on boats and ships and brought here. And now we're slaves, right? There's so much more to our history. And that is the reason and purpose behind telling our story. So enough of that. So I just want to read to you something from the African-American Heritage Encyclopedia. And this is about a man whose name is Robert Purvis. He was a slaveholder's mulatto son. Purvis was so light-skinned and rich that people mistook him for a white aristocrat. An underground railroad leader, he used his estate near Philadelphia to raise prize-winning poultry and to hide runaway slaves. From Charleston, South Carolina, the second of three sons, young Purvis was to be a determined opponent of slavery. At the age of 9, his father sent the family to Philadelphia, where Purvis enrolled in the Pennsylvania Abolition Society Clarkson School. He later attended Amherst College in Massachusetts. His father's death left the family well off financially, and with shrewd business savvy, Purvis put his commerce sense to good use. Light-skinned and wealthy, he rejected suggestions that he will relocate and pass, in quotation marks. In 1831, he married Harriet Fortin, the daughter of an African-American businessman and abolitionist James Fortin. Throwing himself into the anti-slavery struggle, he tirelessly worked with the Philadelphia Vigilance Committee. They sheltered runaway slaves in Purvis's safe house. For two decades, Purvis lived in an elegant home in Philadelphia where he entertained abolitionists from America and Europe working politically to end slavery. He welcomed the outbreak of the Civil War, urging President Lincoln to make emancipation his goal. At the end of the war, Purvis was asked to head the Freedoms Bureau. He refused, fearing this was a ploy by President Andrew Johnson to keep black support while attempting to destroy the Bureau. Initially a Republican, Purvis became disheartened as the party retreated from the principles it advocated during Reconstruction. In the mid-1870s, he was criticized for his position on the 15th Amendment, which was ratified in 1870. Purvis was a strong advocate of women's rights and alone among black men supported the women led by Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and Lucretia Mott, who argued that black men should not get the vote before all women, black and white, were included. He also spoke up for the rights of Native Americans and for Irish home rule, though local Irishmen often opposed him. In the matter of rights, there is just one race, and that is the human race, Purvis often said. Once again, that's from the Encyclopedia of African American Heritage. So, hope you enjoyed that little moment there. And that's it. Make sure that you remember to support the podcast through PayPal, Cash App, Venmo, Patreon page, subscribe, share, and like. And thank you. Much love and peace.